Well, good afternoon, Tucson. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news and information. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia. I'm sitting in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village Studio. Today on Buckmaster Show, we'll be introducing you to a wonderful new nonprofit organization founded in Tucson that is helping disadvantaged youth across the country improve their overall grades and graduation rates through the power of music. But first, our regular check-in with the Buckmaster Show financial advisor, Shelley Fishman. Welcome home. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
How was Italy?
It was 5 weeks of some of the most fantastic sightseeing. Some of the, you know, it's good to be Duke. It's good to be the Doge. You know, it's even good to be Pope. Some of the buildings, some of the artwork, just the warmness of the people in general.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to northern Italy, but not that part of northern Italy. I've been to Venice before, but the Veneto is what it's called. It's the area, the flat plain between the Alps and you know, the southern part of the eastern part of Italy. Not to get, you know, too technical about it, but it's towns like Modena and Padua and Verona.
Mm-hmm.
It's places where, for instance, Romeo and Juliet took place in Verona.
Cool.
And also Shakespeare's other play about Verona, Two Gentlemen of Verona. It's the place where the opera Rigoletto takes place. And you can actually go down there and see Rigoletto's house. But more importantly,
wow,
you can see the Duke's palace. And, you know, it's good to be Duke.
Yeah, apparently.
it really was
back then anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
I tell you, well, besides eating, if I ever visit Italy, I'm big into military history. So I'm sure there was some of those types of things around, or they pretty much swept past that?
Well, there's that history. And right, remember, Italy wasn't a country until 1861.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was just a bunch of duchies. It's a bunch of cities.
Like states, affiliated states.
Affiliated states,
yeah,
affiliated
yeah,
through language and culture. but until 1861, in a 10-year period between 61 and 71, the country unified under a king. It had never had a king mm-hmm. before. You know, that king for, you know, 20 or 30 years turned out to be a pretty good ruler, and then Mussolini came in.
And then they didn't tune in to hear about the history of Italy, but we're glad to have you back. Now, while you were gone, a lot of action last week in the markets. And so, now, a question, these economic reports that often stimulate change or action, do all of them come out quarterly?
No. You get reports sometimes each month. Very often, a month's report will be modified a couple of weeks later. To give you an idea, the employment report every month that comes out the end of usually the first week of the following month, is based on the first 2 weeks of the month it's recording on. Well, the first 2 weeks is obviously perhaps typical of what that month is going to be, but perhaps not. So you can get what seem to be illogical, radical revisions of, you know, reports that you thought you knew the answer to. And so what happens is, people like me who comment on the economy and comment on markets, you know, tend to try to extrapolate from what they're reading and what they're hearing as to what it really means in terms of economic growth, in terms of how people are affected by what's going on in the economy. And, of course, from my perspective, very important is how the market is going to be affected by it.
You know, you often hear in commercials that, you know, disclaimer, something like, you know, future returns don't reflect past something past record. I can't remember what exactly it is, but it sounds like the way you're describing it, sort of kind of half economic, half science, half tea leaves.
Well, and a little bit of politics.
Okay.
So if there's not a definitive move in one direction or the other, the people who want to picture or paint what the economy is doing in the worst terms can do that.
Mm.
And the people who want to paint it in the best terms can do that. And so depending upon which bubble you live in, you're going to get, you know, conflicting statistics. What I try to do is take a look at the statistics over not just a month or a quarter, but I try to look at a longer period of time to see if I can see trends. Mm. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Let me give you an example. For instance, if I take a look at year-to-date figures for the Dow, the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the typical bond, the Dow, what would you guess is what its year-to-date performance is?
I have no idea. That's why I pay people like you.
There you go. It's up 5.5%.
Okay.
For the 5 months we're in into the year. The NASDAQ's up 13.7%. And the S&P 500, which is a much better measurement of what the market in general is doing, is up 11.9%.
And that's for what time period?
Just from year to date.
Okay, wow. Now, that's pretty good.
It's very good. If I take a look at what I call Biden to date, in other words, the middle of the first month of 2021 to date, we get the Dow up 27.4%, the NASDAQ up 21.2%, and the S&P up 38%. So you look and you say, well, okay, where did Biden start? You know, he started in a down market because we were in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at those numbers, I say, well, did Biden do anything to make those really good numbers happen, or did he just luck out? You know, and come into office at a time when the market had really taken a hit. And it's a little bit of both.
I tell you what, I'm very proud of the American spirit because I really expected that the climb, the crawl up back from the pandemic would be a lot slower. But I mean,
as it has been elsewhere in the world.
Right. But really, I mean, it's almost, if you look back now, I mean, you know, we still have some supply chain issues and some, you know.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's not that bad. So what the markets seem to be reacting. Tell me something, and I, we'll talk a little bit about this in the next segment, but, you know, kind of the disconnect you get between those are great numbers.
And those are great numbers.
If I'm in the market, I'm probably doing good.
Okay, so if you're in the market, you are doing something that the pundits and the economists and the politicians aren't doing. You're voting with your dollars, okay? You're putting it on the line and saying, this is what I think the economy is going to do several months or even a year or two into the future, and you're voting with your dollars. So the market thinks we're in good shape. Now, if you take a look at real GDP growth over the past year, it has been spectacular according to, you know, historical norms. We have seen since, you know, 1980, 1990, we have seen typical growth in the 2-2.5% range per year in gross domestic product gains. In the last quarter of last year, annualized, we had a 3.6% gain. That is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
This first quarter, things dropped down all the way to 2.8%.
Now, is that remarkable in terms of history or just remarkable in terms of context?
Well, it's both.
Okay.
Because, again, the last time we had GDP growth up that high, what would you guess?
Oh, after the Second World War, maybe?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was after the Eisenhower administration. So we haven't seen that kind of robust growth. When you put that, and that's, by the way, that's adjusted for inflation.
Mm.
When you put that in the context of coming out of a pandemic and having relatively flat population growth, because one of the things that causes GDP growth is population growth. You know, more people more people buying stuff. But we haven't had that. That's flattened out. And we've got a whole generation, my generation, that's retiring in droves.
Shelley, when we come back, I want to talk about some other very intriguing, for those of us who follow this, intriguing financial news. The Biden administration just slapped some pretty hefty levies on the Chinese.
And I have my opinions.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Let's talk about that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Feel free to give us a call, 790-2040.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. They're on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's has been producing delicious baked goods for over 20 years. They're open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. You know, you could be an office hero. Why not stop by tomorrow and pick up yourself one of their famous Danish Kringles, then pick up some stuff, other pastries for your staff. Check out their offerings at monadsdanishbakery.com, or you can also find the link at buckmastershow.com. We're talking with the Buckmaster Show financial advisor, whiz kid, all-around brilliant guy, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, I kind of teased before the break, the Biden administration just announced some pretty hefty tariffs on some Chinese goods, and I don't, you know, I put my political hat on, and I get a little skeptical, but I mean, we're talking about, so steel and aluminum, 7.5% to 25% this year. Semiconductors from 25 to 50% next year, doubling it. Electric vehicles this year going from 25% to 100% tariff. Now, I studied a little bit of economics, and I'm concerned about, you know, anytime that you reduce the supply of something, the price goes up. So what is your, I guess I'm concerned about, and frankly, if there's anything COVID taught us, was our weaknesses in our supply chains and our production of critical materials here in the United States. And I don't think, my concern is if the Chinese decide to just say, okay, fine, we're not going to sell it to you, which they probably won't do. I mean, are we prepared to fill that gap? Do we have the infrastructure? And what's that going to do to prices for the average consumer?
Okay, so the answer to one of your questions there is we are not prepared yet. Mm-hmm. A little bit of you know, history. What happened starting really in the 1980s and in some cases moving even before that, was we had a series of decisions made about offshoring manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, very wide-ranging. And when I was taught economics, there was something called natural advantage, which is to say that if you've got one country that does something very, very well or very, very cheaply, and it's got an advantage over you in that respect, you should buy that stuff from that country and, you know, reuse your own labor and your own resources for stuff that you do very, very well. And so historically, in the past 50 years or so, we've done a lot of that. You know, a famous example of a treaty was NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Now, NAFTA had a very mixed set of results. It had very positive results on prices and many, many things. It had very positive results on some of our neighbors. But it put a lot of people out of work.
Yeah.
And one of the things we didn't do, you know, we're very good at doing half a job, is we didn't make it easy for the people who were going to be disadvantaged by a treaty like that to find other meaningful work. And so it displaced a lot of people. What we've seen with, for instance, imports from Asia and especially China, is that it has helped us reduce the price on things that most middle-class people buy every day, from, you know, foodstuffs and T-shirts to televisions. So, you know, what it did is it hid a problem, which is that in all of the GDP growth that we've seen in the past 50 years, most of that, the vast majority of that, has gone to the top 10% of earners in this country.
The rest of it
hasn't been spread around.
Well, and that maybe comes back to what we're talking about in the first segment. I mean, if you're in the stock market, you're doing pretty good, but that disconnect between what
Absolutely.
I'm hearing, you know, your average family out there saying I'm paying $4 a dozen for eggs, you know, they're not.
They're not. Let me connect these dots for you. So the middle class has continued to be able to live a middle class existence because the stuff they need to buy has gone down in price radically from where it was when we were measuring. So as a result, we haven't had a revolution. You know,
thank goodness.
You know,
yeah,
keep the rabble happy. You know, whether it's through gladiator fights or through other things that keep people content in their lives. That, however, has been a very, very narrow path to victory.
I want to go on record here to clarify that neither Ben nor the Buckmaster Show nor Shelley intended to call the average consumer out there rabble.
I was being sarcastic.
A turn of phrase.
You know, exactly.
So
I regretted it as I said it.
Yeah, and you talk about unintended consequences. And, you know, here's an example I found. So when President Obama put tariffs on the automobile tires manufactured in Japan, it did save 1,200 domestic jobs, but it resulted in an added cost of about $1 billion to the rest of us as consumers buying U.S. tires. Now, I always try and buy American made. And I tell you, the one thing that really frosted my hide was in the middle of the pandemic when you couldn't find surgical masks because we're all required to wear them. I found the ones I started to find in the grocery store were made in China.
Because we didn't make any of that stuff.
Right. It's a surgical mask. How hard is that?
Well, it's not hard, but it's not profitable.
Good point.
So what we've started to do now, especially in terms of repatriating, if you will, manufacturing and the things that are critical to our economy, is we've started to find ways to discourage the consumption of that stuff when it's offshored and encourage the consumption of that stuff that is produced here.
So
now, that doesn't happen overnight, Ben. And so we saw, for instance, Trump slapping tariffs on, you know, on steel and other things from China, what, 8 years ago. He also did that on goods from Canada and some of our, you know, trading partners. That had an inflationary effect. What we didn't do is the flip side of that, which is to meaningfully bring that manufacturing back here into this country. Biden has tried to do that. I believe that the tariffs that were just announced are inflationary and premature. So I do not agree with the Biden administration on this, though I do believe that doing that stuff and announcing it and rolling it out over time is probably a better way to get to the objective you want, which is to onshore all of that manufacturing and create American jobs.
Which I'm all for, you know, particularly when you think about the potential, you know, with Taiwan. And just the number of chips that they make that go into everything we use today, that's very scary. So I'm all about American made.
And we've done chips. That's a big win. But again, none of those new factories is online yet.
Do you see the potential also on the backside of this for retaliatory tariffs by the Chinese on oil,
absolutely.
Aircraft, automobiles? You know, we export a ton of stuff to China.
Yes, China has. Made a lot of mistakes economically, but one of the things they have been pretty good at is seeing where their weaknesses are potentially in terms of manufacturing sectors and filling it in. Right now, the vast majority of electric vehicles being manufactured worldwide are being manufactured in China.
And they go for $12,000 a pop.
And they go for less than, we sell that stuff. You know, we're not importing that stuff. We're very little of that. That's coming into Europe and it's coming into other countries. We don't see it here.
Well, the other part of this is it's also the elements that go into the manufacture of the electric vehicles, the batteries, and frankly, non-EV batteries. Thing, you know, you're talking cell phones, computers. They're slapping tariffs on that, too.
We offshored all of that,
yeah.
And now we're regretting it and trying to make up for it. So this is a process. I think that some of the things that we're beginning to see is not so much in the high-end stuff, but in the low-end stuff, as companies, who are big retailers, are beginning to say, well, what are we going to do if we're faced with having to raise prices on stuff that, you know, our customers really rely on? Mm-hmm. And so some of those tariff announcements were seen by those retailers, with some real concern.
So if we made Shelley King for a day, I would assume you could find the data saying, okay, in order to support our computer industry, in order to support our EV industry, in order to support our washing machine industry, here are the minimum thresholds of pieces and parts we need. So would you have held off on those tariffs until where we could make the switch seamlessly or lose close to seamlessly?
I would have done both of the things at the same time. Mm-hmm. In other words, as we're onshoring, then you make the foreign goods more expensive. So that it's a push and pull rather than slap the tariffs on and then let the market adjust by seeing those higher prices in the market, seeing people are willing to pay higher prices for those things, and therefore we can support American manufacturing because we're selling those things at higher prices.
One thing about the Chinese leadership, they're no dummies. Do you think they saw this coming?
You know, it would be hard not to. Which is why they've made so many adjustments. But the Chinese economy this is a whole other discussion. The Chinese economy has done magnificent things in the past 30 or 40 years, but it has also made several huge errors in the past 30 or 40 years. Mm. One of the things they haven't been able to do successfully is raise a middle class. Without a middle class, they don't have domestic markets for the stuff they're now making in China. They have to sell it overseas. So they're essentially captive to their overseas trading. And that is a very alarming situation for them.
Do you see, because I've heard rumors now they're trying to get around this by bringing their goods into Mexico and then bringing them up under those rules. Is that, do you think they can actually pull that off?
Or, no, of course not. They'll try it. They'll get away with it for a couple of months. We'll catch on and make a fix. And maybe that's the way you ease into some of that, is, you know, they adjust, we adjust, they adjust, we adjust. But right now, what is so important is that we find a way to grow our middle class through education, through technical support, technical education, so that we can bring back with the proper skills that, you know, right now we've got, what, 5 million technical jobs we still can't fill in this, you know, here in this country. So, yeah, you open up a chip factory here, but if we can't man it, what happens? Robots.
No, and I'm a big fan of you know, STEM and you know, like some of the local programs here, like JTED, and I just, I think that that's definitely a direction we should go. It just strikes me that this is not a good, well, there's never a good time, but this is definitely not a good time for an economic cold war with China.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's never a good time, and this might not be a good time. We'll see.
Yeah.
But as this conversation has kind of demonstrated, all of these things are so interwoven that every time you, you know, tweak it here, something else, very often an unintended consequence, pops up, and you go, oh, God, what am I going to do about that?
Nobody was looking downstream.
There you go.
Shelley, again, welcome back. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with the Buckmaster Show listeners, and you'll be back with us with Bill next week.
You bet.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. When we come back, I'm going to introduce you to some real guitar heroes. You're going to want to hear this. Stick around.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill in the Socolo Village Green Thing Studios. Listen, if you're not sure what kind of plants can survive the summer heat, or you're planning ahead for your fall gardens, you're an optimist like me, do what Laura and I do and visit the good folks at Green Things Socolo Village Studios. 13 acres of everything you need and friendly staff with the best advice in town. They're located on River Road just west of Brandy Fenton Park. While you're there, check out the imported furniture and beautiful art at Socolo Village. You can find them on the web at greenthings.com or socolovillage.com. Don't forget our Buckmaster Liveline is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Feel free to give us a call. Today, I'm going to introduce you to a wonderful nonprofit that I just found about that was founded and is operating out of Tucson. It's having a tremendous positive impact on students all across the country. Joining us today to tell us more is Brad Richter, who is the co-founder and executive director. Brad, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks for having us, BBG.
And then Freddie Vasquez, who's the regional director for Tucson.
Thank you.
Welcome, Freddie.
Thank you.
So tell me about lead guitar. I mean, I go to your website, and the numbers are astounding. In a good way, as far as the improvements that are being shown with these students just when they're exposed to music education. And it's kind of half art, half science, or?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's the same effect you can see with athletics. With music, there's a few more connections between math and reading that I think are really important. But a lot of it is about helping students find their tribe in school and find a community that they can trust and finding a class they want to show up for and do well in every day in it. And, you know, maybe if they show up to a lead guitar class in fifth period, they're a little more alert for the algebra class in sixth period. And that's one of the ways it makes a difference.
Now, your co-founder is a successful entrepreneur. And he credits much of his entrepreneurial success to the discipline he learned studying guitar.
He does. And I think we see that a lot. You know, the hours of practice, the focus on detail. Mm-hmm. When you're playing in an ensemble, just like a band or an orchestra, the focus on teamwork and listening skills and really being aware of what's happening around you, they're all things that translate into life and career skills.
I don't think, and I've shared my story with you about my growing up with music, and it was in a pretty rough and tumble mining town, and a lot of opportunities to get into trouble, but we're just very blessed to have a music teacher there, Dr. Leland Miller, I'll never forget him, and he saved literally a bunch of lives. He kept kids out of trouble because he pushed music, and there was always a reward. I mean, we went off to Disneyland every year, and it was just, and I mean, that carried me through all the way through college, that music. And I just, so you don't have to sell me. I'm already a believer in the power of it. But Freddie, I mean, what, as you're working with these young people, I mean, the first time they get it right, I mean, is there a literal aha moment? Can you see it on their face and you just know they're going to rush home and play for grandma that night? Or
yeah, in the beginning, of course, with our beginning classes, it's a lot of salesman tricks of trying to sell the art or the beauty of, you know, playing guitar. And usually around in the spring, or it could be even sooner, but once those students kind of have that light bulb, you know, moment, that's when it's like, okay, it's definitely worth it. I'm so glad. And a lot of it is like either, wow, you know, Mr. Vasquez, I could actually play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star a lot better. Mm-hmm. I like it. I want to keep doing more and more. Are we going to have guitar next year? And, you know, I can't wait to play this for, you know, for my parents or for my family members.
You know, in my other radio role, I deal with a lot of military, and there's not a lot of room for mistakes. And, you know, the same thing with music. It can't, if you're playing your part, it can't be kind of, sort of. I mean, it's got to be right. In fact, I was at an event on Easter at our church, and they had some musicians in, and we happened to be there early, so they were warming up. And there was a trumpet that was so badly out of tune. And I might have been the only person in the congregation that noticed it, but it was, I mean, like nails on a chalkboard. But, I mean, when you talk about learning discipline early and learning about hard work, you've got to work. You've got to practice to get it right.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of parallels between military service and music in the sense, I mean, the consequences aren't nearly as serious. Sure. In music. But, you know, if you make a mistake in an ensemble, just like what you heard, if the trumpet player plays a wrong note, everybody plays a wrong note. And the average listener doesn't know who it was. They just know that didn't sound good. And the humiliation you feel, right, if you're the, you know, so the desire to do right by the team and the people around you, I think, is also a character builder.
Now, Freddie, I think the special thing about this, again, when I look at your numbers, so this program is completely free of charge to the children, correct? To mm-hmm. the students?
Yes.
Including the instrument?
No, not the instrument. The instrument, we do offer a discount with some of our partner distributors for schools to purchase.
Mm-hmm. We make the schools purchase them for the kids.
Okay. Yeah. So I tell you, it's a big difference. When I first started playing trumpet, I had a loner cornet. And it was not the same. I mean, when I got my own trumpet finally, I mean, that made a world of difference to me because mm-hmm. it was mine, you know. So we talk about the demographics of the students that you're particularly targeting. And don't quote me on this figure, but something like 89% of them are on subsidized programs anyway.
Yeah, so. So it's all the schools that have our free program is 80% and above of free and reduced lunch in their schools.
And that's by design.
That's by design. Mostly what we're trying to get to are the kids who are least likely. One, schools that serve lower socioeconomic communities tend to not have the same assets. Not the same tax dollars are flowing into them. Like in Arizona, we have the tax credit that does a lot of schools a lot of good. But if parents at a school don't earn enough to put a tax credit into that school, they're going to miss out on some field trips and nurses and counselors and music. And so we're trying to hit the schools that are least likely to have music classes and the communities that are least likely to be able to afford music outside of school.
Now, I'm showing my age here. I'm so old I remember when God was a teenager, but the music programs in school, there was no charge. I mean, you had to buy your own instrument, or you maybe not, you didn't, but I mean, there was no extracurricular fee or anything for that. Has that changed?
That's changed, and it's changed particularly in Arizona. A lot of extracurricular activities can be paid with tax credits, and those aren't coming to the lower income schools. And it does make a pretty big difference. And there's a strong correlation between those key things missing: field trips, nurses, librarians, counselors, music, sports, at the schools that have that 80% or higher demographic.
Folks, you can learn more. Visit leadguitar.org and take a look at their numbers. They're astounding. John, when we come back, I'd like you to share some of those figures because I think people who have not been immersed in music. Yeah, and we started the segment talking about why it does make a difference, but they still may not get it. But you've got the data and the facts to prove it, and it's just wonderful. And so you're in Tucson, but you are in how many schools around the country?
Or
how
105.
Wow. And that's, well, I guess you, I saw you had like a 73% growth over the last year or 2 years in students, or?
Yeah, over the last 2 years.
That's astounding. That's astounding. Really good stuff. We're going to take a short break now, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. If you'd like to interact, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management line. That is 790-2040. We'll be back with more with some real guitar heroes, the folks from Lead Guitar.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Mm-hmm. Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. We're broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village Studios. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. Hey, you might have noticed it's starting to warm up, so it's a perfect time to plan your summer visit to the much cooler city of Silver City, New Mexico. Silver City sits at 6,000 feet elevation. It's naturally cooler, and it's also in the heart of the beautiful Gila National Forest. Lots of outdoor adventures. Silver City is also a small town with big culture and lots of things to do. Start your journey by visiting South New Mexico. Let's try that again, gentlemen. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. It's only a three-hour drive from Tucson. You're definitely going to enjoy it. We're back talking with the two fellows from Lead Guitar. You can learn more, visit leadguitar.org. I'm joined by Brad Richter, who's the co-founder and executive director, and Freddie Vasquez, who's the regional director for Tucson. Brad, again, if folks go to your website, there's a, I think on the About Us tab, but there's like a one sheet that pops up that actually has some of the statistics of the positive impact that this program has had on these young people. Can you just, I know you didn't realize there's going to be a quiz, but can you just, you know, share, sight read the music for us?
Sure. Yeah. Some of the impacts that I get very excited about is we did a data sharing agreement with Phoenix Union High Schools and found that we looked at student grades before joining Lead Guitar, during Lead Guitar, and graduation rates. So 80% of students in our program improved their cumulative GPA from before joining the class until after. Those were students who stayed in 2 years or more. Did a study in Chicago on absenteeism and among students who are identified as at risk of dropping out, absences dropped by 52%. 93% of our – so part of our model is we're sending in expert guitarists like Freddie and his employees in Tucson to co-teach with a teacher that's employed by the school, so but that doesn't play guitar, and we're kind of simultaneously training them to teach and play guitar. So 93% of those teachers reported a improvement in student focus even outside of guitar class throughout their day that they attributed to Lead Guitar. And we found that a big one because after the pandemic, that was a real problem, you know, because of the increase in use of electronics and then just mm-hmm. being zombies online for a year.
Has there ever been a study done? What is the quantifiable psychological reason for this? Is it just because now there's something, you know, it's kind of hard to get excited. Well, I got excited about geometry, but I'm not normal. But, you know, there's other things, you know, I can see where I've got to keep my grades up because I don't want to lose my eligibility to play football. But for music, is it just that? It's just something that they now own, that they can embrace, that motivates them to keep coming back?
I think that's the biggest factor. There's also some connections that I can't explain as well as I'd like to be able to, but some, you know, scientific evidence that studying music improves math and reading. So improves math because, you know, this, you learn music theory, you have to understand, right, you know, the percentages and fractions when you're dividing a measure and counting. And then with reading, like if you have trouble reading, the way you have to sight read music and your eyes move in rhythm from left to right across the page has a really positive effect on the ability to just get used to the rhythm of how to read a book.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. In my senior year of high school, I was just really struggling with physics. And our music teacher, there's a couple of us, he says, well, I'll start a music theory class and you can take that instead. Infinitely more enjoyable, no question. Freddie, in addition to the classes themselves, do these students, is there other support infrastructure? Do they get mentors? Is your staff available? I mean, if you see there's a young person that just maybe has missed a couple classes, is somebody getting on the horn saying, hey, or talking to their parents and saying, what's going on? What can we do to help?
Yeah, with us, of course, any parent, communication has to go through the actual teacher record there at the school. But any extra support, of course, you know, that's the beauty part about how this is structured, is that when we're actually co-teaching, is that, once the teacher record feels very confident, we could easily just, like, separate it as, like, let me just work with the students. I need extra little help. So they could kind of get, like, a 30-minute private lesson or so. And then that kind of really helps out, you know, with that student. Or if they need some extra help of, like, you know, recitals or, you know, we're there, just to help them out with that.
Now, Ben gets a dumb question every show, and this is going to be it, and I hope I don't offend. But, you know, we just heard some lovely classical music coming back. But what if a kid wants to learn Stairway to Heaven?
Well, that's possible, yeah.
Okay, so we had a kid play Stairway to Heaven at a concert just on the We Are Guitar show just a few days ago.
You're right.
Okay, so they're not limited to their music.
No.
It's just...
No, we always start them off, of course, with, you know, the classical method, just because it's just, it's a good foundation. But within our curriculum, we go easily straight into different genres. Fairly quickly, we go to teaching them, like, the 12-bar blues, and then also teaching them how to kind of improvise a little bit of that. And so what we found, just within my own experience, is just like, if you know how to use your fingers and read music, then essentially learning different styles just becomes a little bit easier. I always kind of say it's a lot easier to kind of learn to play with a pick, you know, but then it takes a long time if you need to do like a finger picking, you know, song. So at least we give them that skills, and then they could do pretty much whatever they want off of that.
So is there a progression of difficulty in guitar music?
Yeah.
So what's at the top of the food chain? You got to be an ace to
the piece that we heard as you were coming into this segment.
Okay.
So being able to play a solo guitar piece that has multiple voices at the same time, so you're playing a bass line, a middle voice, and a melody, all one player on one guitar.
Well, outstanding. So I tell you one thing I learned, and we've talked before, is to me. And I don't know if you used to motivate the kids, but I was talking to my father about that when we were at church, and he never played music. But I share with him, if you know how to read music, you in effect know another language.
Because
if your church is anything like mine, just listening to the people singing in there, they're not actually reading out of the hymnal. They're not following the notes. They're just kind of, you know, doing it by ear. They're not actually able to read the music. So, you know, that's another advantage that will carry with you the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think guitar does particularly well in that sense. You were saying the other day that you hadn't played the cornet or the trumpet in ages. And guitar is such an easy instrument to always have with you, and it's quiet. If you live in an apartment building, you're not going to bug the neighbors. And it's a lifelong learning instrument, and that's something that's special about it too, I think.
Well, that's a good point, because when you're a brass player, you got to build up the chops, as they mm-hmm. say. I mean, there's literally muscles in your lips that make it easier to hit some of those high notes. You just recently had an amazing gift from the David and Laura Lovell Foundation. Tell us about that and what's that going to allow you to do.
They gave us their building. So the David and Laura Lovell Foundation has been one of our biggest supporters for the last 10 years, and they intentionally sunset their foundation. They gave away all of their money, and the last thing they gave away was the very building they operated out of. And there was a RFP to apply, you know, a proposal for how we would use the building. And we were talking about this last time we met, that one of our calls to action with, you know, the privilege of getting this building was to open it up to the community. So we were inviting, Freddie is our most expert teacher in our adaptive curriculum. So we're starting that adaptive class because of that building.
Tell us some more about that, because I think that's something that's probably very often overlooked. I mean, every child should have every opportunity, but there are obviously some challenges mm-hmm. if you've got physical challenges. And tell us more about that program.
Yeah, so we just got started with that in 2019. And so the main goal is to essentially include a bigger body of students. And our focus is for students are in the exceptional education program who are neurodivergent, or they're on the spectrum, or any physical disabilities of holding the guitar. And so the way we created that curriculum is it goes alongside with our standard book, but one key thing is that we use this device called the Chord Buddy, which is essentially attaches on the cord at any full-size guitar. And the beauty part about that is that instead of if any guitarist is listening, the hardest part is playing the very first chord with all your fingers, and it doesn't sound great. But with this one, actually with one finger, you press it down and it sounds just lovely. And then with that is that when those students are actually just participating, strumming, keeping the rhythm, it adds actually to our standard classes. And so they're able to participate, join recitals, still learn how to read music, still kind of doing the, all the rhythm fundamentals. And then our latest addition is transferring, or actually when they're ending the book, going back to our standard book. And so some of them may still be using the Chord Buddy, or others, if they feel like it, they're able to start using their fingers and then reading individual pitches. And it's just a smooth path, to that.
So we're unfortunately running out of time, but a couple quick questions. Is this program available to families who are just financially okay?
Or
is
absolutely.
So anybody can sign up?
Yeah, and we do that in several ways. Like, it's more about, the 80% is one way of determining folks who might not have easy access, but there are many reasons that folks might not have easy access to music, and this is one of them. So it doesn't matter. We won't ask any questions about financial situation. Anyone with that need is welcome.
And so for our Buckmaster listeners who want to help out, what can they do? They can go to your website, donate directly there. They can buy a guitar, sponsor a student. What are the options here?
What works best for us is a donation to general operating support through the website, and that allows us to put money into the area of greatest need. And right now, that'll be one of the areas of greatest need, is building that class and making sure it's free no matter what your economic situation is.
You shared a video with me this morning of some of your students performing. It was just absolutely wonderful. Are there opportunities for Tucsonans to come out and see the students perform on occasion? If so, how do we find out about that?
We have a showcase concert at the end of every year. Next year, it'll be at Pima Community College in the big theater there. And do we have a date for that, Freddie?
April 24th, I believe. Yeah.
That's a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's great to kind of see all like the students' hard work, and mm-hmm. it goes from we're inviting our elementary, middle school, and then high school students, and so you can see a wide range of our students.
We have a internet show called We Are Guitar,
okay.
where we gather videos, like the Marine Leadership Academy is on okay. that a lot, and you can go and watch that anytime.
Folks, you can learn more. Visit leadguitar.org. Gentlemen, thanks for sharing just this wonderful, uplifting message of what you're doing in the community.
Thanks for your great questions. This goes by way too fast.
Yeah. Always fun. That's true. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure sitting in for Bill. I'll be back on Thursday talking with you. Don't forget, you can find the podcast of this show at thebuckmastershow.com.